Hello, and welcome to Push and Play, a podcast where we discuss anything between design, culture, and social issues. I'm your host, Danielle Chen. In today's episode, I spent some time talking to two of my favorite designers, Hector Sovad and Mauricio Garcia Venezuela from Advanced Design, about a topic that has been trending in the digital art world for the last couple of months, NFTs. We talked about how NFTs started, and how it gained so much popularity within the last few months. We talked about how it has impacted the digital art world as well as our environment. We talked about some of the actions that we all need to take as individuals, as well as companies and the government when it comes to a new disruptor like NFTs. And lastly, we discuss what we envision the future of the art world might look like in the next few decades. You will be hearing the first half of our conversation on NFTs in this episode, and you can catch the rest of our conversation in part two. Hector Sova brings over 7 years of teaching experience at both the University of Illinois in Chicago, the University of Notre Dame, and the Academy of Art University in their nationally acclaimed industrial design programs. Recognized for his contributions in academia, Hector was awarded the Young Educator of the Year by the Industrial Designers Society of America. An active professional in the field, Hector works as an industrial design contractor through his own studio, H Design, partnering with Crate & Barrel, Design Lab, Nickelodeon, Leapfrog, Foster Grant, Insight Product Development, London Company Invention, as well as various entrepreneurs. Hector is also the founder of the design nonprofit Advanced Design, an organization awarded the Special Achievement Award by the IDSA for making design education more accessible and through disrupting the medium through which design education has been traditionally offered. Advanced Design continues to grow today, connecting students and working professionals to foster a community of design excellence. Mauricio Garcia Venezuela is a graduate student in industrial design. He's currently partaking a master's degree in service design for health and social innovation at the Care Design Lab in Nantes, France. In parallel, he's an apprentice in legal design within Atos International Legal Department in Paris. He's also a lead at Advanced Design. So welcome, Hector and Mao. I'm really excited to have you both on my podcast today. And before we dive into our topic today, I'd like to just quickly introduce to our audience about this nonprofit design organization that has been mentioned in both of your bios, Advanced Design. Advanced Design really brings a lot of wonderful and meaningful initiatives that have created some tremendous impact to our design community, from Ready Set Pro, Being, Lens to Offsite. And you also have a podcast of your own called Context, where you bring on designers and talk to them about a wide range of topics. So for our audience who haven't already yet, you should definitely check out Advanced Design's website at advdes.org, their social media page, as well as their LinkedIn page. So Hector, since you founded this organization, I was wondering if you could talk a little bit about how Advanced Design started and what are some of the current initiatives that your team has been working on?
Yes, Danielle, thank you so much for having me on your podcast. Really honored and really appreciated. Like you mentioned, you know, Mao and I are part of Advanced Design, and you know, essentially the organization was started with one goal in mind, and that was to make design education accessible and to disrupt it along the way. And in the last 5 years, we feel that we've done that in a variety of different ways, whether it's through our initiatives or our annual design conference, Square One, and most recently our design school called Offsite, which is a supplemental to your design education. It's a 12-week rigorous program for students and professionals to join, to level up their skill set so that they can then go out there and succeed. Whether you're a student looking for an internship or looking for your first job, or you're working and you need to just continuing mastering your skills in industrial design, because our industry evolves so much. So what we wanted to do is invite 6 industrial design professionals to teach 6 courses and keep all of our students who are in offsite up to date with what's happening in industry. And obviously, you know, MAO is part of our French initiative, which we are very excited and proud of, because it's our first kind of dive into, you know, European design and that part of the world, kind of across the pond. And, you know, MAO is our lead in France. And I think the best part about that is that MAO himself is not a, you know, French person. He's a Mexican French person who brings just a variety of different perspectives. And, you know, that for us, that's amazing, right? Because we're always seeking diversity in all aspects of who we work with. So that's, in a nutshell, that's advanced design.
That's awesome. Yeah, thank you for sharing that with our audience. Well, again, thank you both for being on my podcast today. I'm really excited to talk to you about a topic that we've talked about here and there, mostly on social media. And I think both of you have mentioned quite a lot through your own platform. So for the sake of, you know, helping everyone better understand what NIT really is, because I think for me, it took me a couple of weeks and also a lot of articles and like a lot of conversations to fully understand what NIT is. So can you both or either of you maybe help our listeners understand what it is and maybe in the most plain words?
Well, I think this topic is so interesting for designers to talk about because it requires some kind of economic knowledge economic theory. And I mean, it's crucial for designers to understand how business works and how economy works if we want to take impact on it and if we want to take part of it. So to answer your question, I think the best way I can describe and define an NFT is the following. So basically, an NFT is a non-fungible token, which doesn't really explain us anything about what an NFT is. So what is a non-fungible token? Well, there's the notion of a token, which is like an item that exists in the digital world, which is non-fungible, meaning that it cannot be exchanged for anything else. So in pre-monetary economy models and pre-capitalist models, you had systems of exchange where 2 people would exchange, for example, a hammer for a chair, let's say. And which is interesting because in pre-colonial times in Mexico, you had those types of exchanges. And those 2 persons exchanging those items had to have some type of accord defining that the items that they are exchanging are of the same use value. So that notion of use value for us designers is like essential. So an NFT or a token that is non-fungible means that it cannot be exchanged for anything else, meaning you cannot take 1 item considered as an NFT and exchange it for another one, because it cannot be exchanged for anything else. So in context, to better illustrate how NFT manifests today, it's mostly in the art world and more specifically in the digital art world. So an NFT today will take the form of a unique piece that is being sold on the internet. It can be a one-off piece or a very unique item that cannot be reproduced and that is unique. And it's tied to Bitcoin, which makes everything so much complicated. But basically, my very long explanation leads to this. It's an NFT today is a piece of art, digital, that cannot be exchanged for anything else. It cannot be measured by other items that could be similar. I don't know if Hector, do you have anything else to add to that?
Yeah, honestly, that is probably the best definition I've ever heard. I think I've been trying to do research on NFT, kind of like NFT for dummies, because like Mao said, it requires a level of economic like understanding, especially with crypto, you know, currency. And just to be fair, for this conversation, I'm approaching this conversation as someone, I'm no expert by no means, but I think we've been having this conversation for the last month, and I'm mostly curious about what's going on. But like Mao said, you know, we can describe an NFT as a cryptographic token that defines an asset uniquely. It can represent both a digital asset, such as an image, but it can also track real world assets. But today we're here to talk about more like on the digital aspect of it. But Mao kind of really hit it on, he defined it quite perfectly. So.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think I especially appreciate the fact that you brought up the fact that, you know, it does require quite a lot of knowledge in economy. And I think it explains a lot why it took me so long to understand it, because I have no knowledge in that area at all until I started researching about it. For anyone who is interested in understanding NFT further, there's a lot of great articles out there, and I'll definitely link a few to the description for this episode. So one thing that was kind of brought up during like our conversation just now is that the crypto art world, I mean, that has existed for quite a long time now. And I mean, crypto art has been growing popularity over the last couple of years. And there are a number of digital marketplaces out there that are super popular, including Zora, Super Rare, and like Nifty Gateway. These are some that came up through my research. And these are some platforms where collectors can buy and sell digital works. But it wasn't until, I think, last year, NFT has gained a tremendous amount of popularity, and it's become this hype over digital tokens. And I think a lot of people were so eager to jump onto it, and we're seeing a lot of smaller artists to finally get a chance or a taste to gain more exposure, recognition, and serious money for their work. So I'm kind of curious to hear why you think NFT has gained so much popularity all of a sudden, and do you think, you know, this pandemic has in any way helped accelerate the trend?
That's a great question. And I think, I don't know if there's a precise and concise way to explain it. And actually, that question was brought up by someone on Twitter that I saw recently. For context, I've been following a musician who's called RAC, Rack, who's been mingling for a long time with the world of design. And right now he's a very prominent voice in the NFT space. So somebody asked that artist on Twitter, why do you think NFTs are blowing up? Is it because of the pandemic? Is it because of the stimulus check? And he said that like the answer is not so easy to pin down, because there are a number of factors that one could list. So for example, you could list, of course, the fact that the economy needs to be stimulated another way now that people are spending less money outside and want to invest in art. That could be one reason. The fact that in the United States you have the stimulus checks that dropped for a lot of people, and that some people wanted to invest in art. Somebody might want to support an artist directly. by investing in their art. But from the artist perspective, which I think is one of the most interesting points of view in this conversation, is having the point of view of the artists themselves, is that actually a lot of them have been exploited for a very long time. And NFT is shedding some light on that problem. So for example, this artist, this musician called Rack, was pointing out that immense platforms such as Spotify or SoundCloud or Google Play have been paying pretty much nothing for every stream that they get. So right now, composing unique pieces of music and putting them online has been brought up like an opportunity to be finally compensated fairly for their work. Because as we all know, in the design industry as well, equipment is expensive, studies are expensive, costs of living are expensive even in a lot of cities. So like music has a cost, art has a cost, plastic art, architecture, everything has a cost that for a very long time has been very highly undermined. And having now a platform that removes the middleman and links people that want to invest in art and the creators themselves is, to me, is the most logical evolution of where artists would like to put on their work, of course, because I mean, in a lot of industries, in creative industries, we don't have syndicates or protections or some, for example, in huge corporations like Spotify or Google Play or SoundCloud, creators might lack the presence of an organization that protects their rights or as workers, right? So removing that middleman between the employer who puts money on the table and the creators, like the workers, one may say, is like right now is the, to me, it's very comprehensible that that might be one of the main reasons that this has exploded. And I mean, we've spent like more than a year and a half deprived from art, deprived from culture. And we it's understandable that we as individuals and as a society, we might want to, we are craving of consuming art or of getting art in our lives. I've been very critical of NFTs, if you've been following my in my Instagram stories or what else, but it's understandable. What I'm getting at is there are a number of reasons why NFTs are popular right now. And from the artist's perspective, it's totally, it's like, I get it. So from that point of view, for the sake of being fair and balanced, of course, one may say, I think that's one of the reasons. Hector, I'm curious to hear from your perspective, why do you think NFTs have been like rising and exploding in popularity?
Yeah, so I think right now there are a couple of reasons, and I think they will overlap with what Mao just said. I think one of them has to do with the, you know, pandemic that we're in. I think, you know, cryptocurrency and NFTs have been around, you know, this isn't something new. It's been around for like 2-3 years now. And if you look at like the monthly sales volume in January of 2021, like a couple months ago, NFTs have almost surpassed $90 million in sales compared to like this time around last year. It wasn't even like, you know, $1 million. And I think a lot of it has to do with a variety of different things that are happening right now. I think one, people are starting to realize that this is a really good way to generate income from, because like Mao said, you know, artists and designers have been underappreciated and undercompensated. So they feel like this is a way for me to generate money. This can be like, you know, some artists found this as a lifeline selling NFTs, and some people have actually, this is like their primary source of income, which is strange because I'm still trying to wrap my head around all of this. Some people are saying that this is a bubble, that this is going to crash, you know, and others are saying that NFTs are here to stay. So it's a, and I think as more people are investing into NFTs and more famous people, celebrities, and everyone's cashing in, I think that also is going to encourage other people, especially like normal people like us, to be like, oh, what is this? And how can I benefit from this? So right now they're like, if you look at it on a very surface level, there really isn't any risk for the person, right? Like, obviously there is risk, and we can talk more about that later, but one of the biggest risks is obviously this environmental impact of it. But, you know, like, you go outside and you get in your car, and that is one way of polluting the planet, and people don't think about that, right? So, but as you see more people like, you know, Mark Cuban and all these people who are investing, and then in the design community, because our design community is so small, I mean, our design community is also a bubble. You see other people on Instagram who are saying like, oh, I'm doing this, I'm doing that. And I think a lot of it's just curiosity, especially since we're sitting at home in front of the computer, like, why not, right? Am I 100% for it? Absolutely not. Like, that's why we're here to talk about it. But I think there is a surge right now, and it kind of started in December, and it's booming. And I don't know. I think for me, I think it's a bubble. I think it might crash soon, because that kind of seems like the trend. 2020, 2021, everyone buying stocks, you know, making themselves rich off of GameStop, and that again, that crashed. So I don't know. It could be a bubble. Who knows? But I'm here to kind of learn as well.
Hector, you mentioned something interesting that I forgot to consider as well. There's also, in one of the reasons that why this has been exploding recently, is something that you mentioned, the popular people with huge platforms and huge amount of reach, making this popular as well. If you've been following Elon Musk recently on Twitter, you would know that he is extremely invested in cryptocurrencies and crypto platforms. And I mean, when somebody so influential like that, like him, says that Dogecoin is the way to go, the industry might follow, because he has a huge platform. And that is also something that we can talk about it in a minute, is people with huge platforms giving something the media to consume on. You might have seen some headlines of so-and-so piece of crypto art has been sold for $69 million, or a piece of pixel art that was sold for $1 million. It also plays with the media, and which is interesting, because recently I was rewatching the Dieter Rams documentary by Gary Huswit. And at one point, Dieter Ram is criticizing the Mark Newson lounge chair because of what he represents. It's the most expensive thing that has been sold at an auction, basically. And what Dieter Ram's response to that is that he's against that type of experiments, because it perpetuates a bad message about design in the media. It reverberates and it creates like an echo chamber, and it amplifies a negative vision of, in the specific case of Mark Newson, a negative vision of what design is. So I think there's also something in the way people with platforms and the media also make this popular by making sensational headlines like, can you believe that this piece of crypto art has been sold for $69 million? It's things like that as well. And which is something also that we should talk about, is how we approach like those shocking news and like those shocking headlines that might make you react so drastically. And what makes people invest in crypto art as well is like, oh my God, I need to get on this train. I need to get on this new trend that is Elon Musk is talking about on Twitter, and there's people making so much money online, and oh my God, I gotta get on that. And I think there's something that the media and ourselves have to do with it, and it's popularity.
Yeah, I think you two both brought up some really, really good points. I mean, I think the last point that we were just discussing is like the media. I'm personally really hoping that, like Mao, you were saying, like more people with huge platforms will start to talk about either NFT or other things through a more critical lens. So it's not just, I mean, I'm hoping that it's not just like, hey, this is cool. You should get onto this train, but rather like, yeah, this is cool. And here are some of the impacts that this new trend can create to our life, to our society in a variety of ways. I mean, that's how I personally would love to see how NFT evolves, if it's here to stay. But, and I think another thing, not to really add on to anything, but really to kind of highlight something that I heard through both of you is this level of transparency or assurance that we're seeing through this platform. I feel like the value that you're seeing through a digital artwork is just not as transparent as what it is in the physical world. I feel like through NFT, it's really helping create this level of protection and also this assurance for the digital artist to know that, you know, I will always paid whether or not this art gets sold to like one other person and the person after that. But yeah, I think that's really interesting to see how NFT might evolve in the next couple of months. And I think one thing that Mao or Hector, you brought up is, you know, some of the pieces that we're seeing being sold through NFT are just, I mean, they're being sold for hundreds and thousands of dollars. And I mean, I remember hearing this episode from the Daily Podcast where the author of a New York Times technology column, where they wrote about NFT. The column got turned into an NFT and it was sold for more than $500,000. So, I mean, that kind of blew my mind because I don't know, like, I guess I'm still trying to understand this, because why would someone want to spend so much money on something that is like available for everyone at no cost? I'm curious to hear your thoughts on this.
So I think you, both of you are bringing up some really good insights. You know, you both just talked about transparency and how people with influence are really promoting NFTs. The thing, what I've been noticing is even just on social media, within our community of industrial designers, is that not everyone who is promoting NFTs, you know, they're doing it for self-serving reasons, right? So I think for those who are watching this happen, you should do your research and do your homework and really determine if this is good for you. Because at the end of the day, the way that I see it is someone is selling their work and they are putting their own value on that work. Now, does that mean that piece of work is valuable? No, that's where things get really tricky, because it is all subjective, right? You know, Mao brought up Elon Musk, which is really funny, because Elon Musk, as a great of a guy that he is, I'm sure he is, or a genius, he's the same dude who a year ago or 2 years ago tweeted that he was going to take Tesla private. And, you know, that was a huge shady thing. I think that's kind of considered fraud, because you're trying to manipulate, you know, investors and trying to, you know, so like, that's what I mean. Like, it's people that are doing this aren't always doing it for, you know, a lot of the times it's for self-serving reasons. And they're putting a value on their own work. And, you know, before this whole digital stuff, you know, how you added value was justified by everyone, right? Like, this is valued at this and this is valued at that. It was like a consensus by everyone. And here, everyone is just like, all right, I made this rendering or I made this sketch and I think it's worth X, Y, and Z. And you're like, well, I think different. I don't think, because I can do the same thing. You know, so there can be arguments made for both sides. Or I could just come in and screenshot and be like, boom, I have, like, why would I got this thing for free? Because essentially an NFT, you're not really owning anything. Essentially what you're owning is this, like, you know, this like data and bragging rights, essentially. So I think right now it really comes down to this value. And, you know, as far as, like, you know, these risks that you were talking about, Danielle, you know, given that anybody can create an NFT, the scarcity of each piece does not guarantee value. So losses can stack up if the hype dies down. And that's kind of my biggest issue with this bubble is right now the hype is so, everyone's talking about it. And, you know, let's say like everyone in the world dives into NFT, 7 billion people, then everything's going to be valued at pennies because no one's going to be like, you know, there's going to be so many people involved. So in the beginning, it's good to do it. But then once everyone has access to it, then everything becomes, it's worthless. So it's interesting. Fraud can also be, you know, a risk. And I think, you know, not so long ago, a couple of weeks ago, I saw it on Instagram. They started, there's a group of people that started talking about how this can be equivalent to a pyramid scheme. So if you think of a pyramid scheme, and I know a little thing or two about pyramid schemes, because when I graduated, after I graduated school, I joined a pyramid scheme and I was a part of one for like a year and a half. And I can dive, that requires a whole different podcast episode. But in a pyramid scheme, you are selling something to someone. That person is buying it, but they get nothing in return. There is no physical transaction. So right now, NFTs and cryptocurrency and all of this stuff is not really being governed by a government agency. So I think, honestly, I think what we're witnessing is a really good Hollywood movie in the making. In a couple of years, it's going to be a really good movie about it, because this is going to burst and then the SEC is going to be involved. And it's interesting. I'm just a spectator right now. So
yeah, I think one thing you brought up really got me thinking. I mean, I think this is something that we've talked about, like about the design world, the design industry. I mean, I think all of us here have read the book Ruined by Design. Am I correct? By Mike Montero.
Yep, that's correct.
Yeah. And it, I mean, I think one thing that he kept mentioning in the book is the gatekeeper. I mean, I think we as designers, we need to become gatekeepers to hold each other accountable, because, like, I mean, in recent years, and especially last year, we started to talk a lot more about how to make more ethical design decisions and how to make sure that we're actually including everyone into the conversation instead of excluding one another or really designing for our own value. And I think right now, the biggest problem that I'm seeing were like this thing that I started thinking by what Hector was saying is like, there's no gatekeeper. There's no governance of this platform. And yeah, everyone's just so eager to jump onto it and without really thinking about the consequences that they're going to create.
I think what you're mentioning is absolutely crucial to the conversation and what Hector was mentioning. And I would like to touch on a number of points. You asked a couple of minutes ago, why would anyone wanna spend this amount of money on NFTs? And I think there are a number of points that tie together regarding what Hector was saying. Is crypto has been around for a while, for a number of years now. And believe it or not, there are people in the crypto space who have been using this platform to launder money as well. And there are a lot of people as well who are using these platforms to just simply not necessarily just support artists wholeheartedly. It's also, like Hector said, a way to brag. And I think it was on The Verge article that what they were selling was basically bragging rights, because what you are acquiring via this monetary transaction is the ownership rights, which are facilitated, of course, by the technology itself behind Bitcoin and cryptocurrency, is that you can track everything. But I mean, somebody will want to spend thousands and or millions of dollars on a piece, and that begs the question, how do you determine value? Especially, I ask this question because this is crucial for us, for this, as designers, I think, is how do we determine value? We speak so much about use values use values in general. So how do we determine use or value, I guess? How do we shape it? How do we quantify it? So as Hector said, an artist or a creator might put a piece online and said, I think this is worth at least one Ethereum, which is the currency that is used, is one Ethereum, which is about $1,000. But then, because most of these transactions are happening via auctions, the value is not necessarily only determined by the monetary value that the artist has put, but also the value that somebody, like an acquirer, a buyer, might want to put in the piece. So the value is determined here in simple terms by who has the deepest pockets. And you mentioned at one point that Bitcoin, like NFTs, these platforms, they have no gatekeepers. And I think I might disagree with that point. In my opinion, gatekeepers are the buyers, are the people who are putting the money into these platforms. Is you either have the money to participate or you don't, and then you're out. It was also Rack who said that gatekeepers are gone via NFTs. I tend to disagree. I just think, in my personal opinion, I think that the gatekeepers are simply changing. And I think you said something very interesting, Daniel, that gatekeepers can exist to keep each other accountable. And that is so important. But there's also another side of the coin, which is gatekeepers are also there to make sure who gets in and who isn't. It's a way to make something exclusive, which is the largest characteristic of this new type of economic exchange, is the exclusivity of it. And I mean, that ties into the topic of transparency as well, in my opinion, because some people might pinpoint individual creators saying, how can you put a sketch of a shoe as an NFT on the market? How dare you, and sell it for $1,000? How dare you? But I don't think, in my opinion, I don't think pinpointing specific individuals is the right way to approach this. We have to look at it from a systemic point of view. We have to look at it from a bigger picture. We have to lift our heads up and see what's happening that's bigger than what I'm perceiving. And in what I would argue in the term in this whole notion of transparency and value and monetary exchange and responsibility as well and accountability is, who are we keeping accountable? Is it the individual creators, or is it the systems that are facilitating that these individuals exist? I think it was Camus who wrote The Last Day of a Condemned Man. In that book, the final scene is a huge celebration of the decapitation of a prisoner. When I see, like, which, you know, I might be guilty of this as well, pinpointing specifics on this platform, it just creates a culture of an inability to look at the systemic problem that is allowing this thing to happen. So I think it wasn't recently I came across an article by Yoanny Lemercier, who's a French artist who wrote a piece on the environmental impacts of NFTs. And he concluded the piece by saying that platforms like Foundation, Nifty Getaway, all those platforms that are facilitating crypto exchanges, they have absolutely no transparency on how they work, and they are not being held accountable by anyone because they are not regulated. Hector said it as well, like these platforms are not regulated by the government, and it makes like the whole nature of neoliberalism and this type of economic systems, which is in one might say like very similar to venture capitalism, where you are just speculating, which is very interesting. I would love to hear like somebody who is invested in venture capital. It's the whole system. It lacks transparency and it lacks accountability. And I think it's also part of the problem and why we have today this type of business culture of move fast and break things. We are not asking the question, okay, breaking things at the sake of whom? Who is being impacted by this? And there's a whole another conversation of responsible design and impact studies that I would love to get to touch on later in the conversation. But there's so much to be said about being critical of not only the individual creators, but also the systems that are facilitating or not these things. I mean, and I think that's a nice segue to another point of this conversation, which is the environmental thing.
Yeah, I think this is super interesting. I really think that this is a whole systemic thing that we are looking at. And I mean, I don't think we have the answers here yet, but yeah, I don't know. Like when we get to that point, when we're gonna see some systemic level of governance for NFT. So as I've mentioned in the beginning of this episode, this conversation has been split into two episodes, and you can find the rest of our conversation in part two. If you like this episode, please share this podcast with your friends, families, and colleagues, and give us a review on Apple Podcasts so others can find us as well. I look forward to having you join my next conversation to learn and reflect together. See you next time. Bye.